better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. You fry some garlic. It's and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour. How are you doing this evening? Isn't today nice compared to yesterday and the day before? I swear, I was talking to, I can't remember the name of the farmer, and I'm sorry right now, but Sweet Little Farm that is currently selling a lot of different types of tomatoes as well as some salad mix at the Sebastopol Farmer's Market. And he was saying, my tomatoes got cooked on the vine yesterday. And then we were laughing because really what he was describing was, you know, the vines practically were making their own tomato sauce. That's how hot it was. Made me think of the time that my half-sister, she was a lot older than me. She'd run into the house and get eggs and take them and cook, you know, crack them open and fry them on manhole covers when it got this hot. And I'm really glad it cooled off. But we have a hot show. How's that? today was the first of three celebrations out at Iron Horse Vineyards, which is celebrating 30 years there at that beautiful location in between, really, Sebastopol and Forestville on Ross Station Road. Had a couple of glasses of sparkling wine and also talked with Maria Hunt, author of the new The Bubbly Bar, Champagne and Sparkling Wine Cocktails for Every Occasion, up from San Diego. Welcome to Sonoma County, Maria.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And before I ask you about the book, I'm going to introduce our other guests. We have, for a return visit, I don't know how many times you've been here, it's Bradley Gray of Gray Matters. Is it Gray Matters, Inc.? Gray Matters PR?
Gray Matters Communications.
Communications, there we go. And you have brought with you Vance, don't tell me, I want to get this right, Vance Petrunov?
Yes, that's correct.
Excellent. And you are involved with wine in many different ways, all having to do with Bulgaria. You have Bulgarian Master Vintners.
Bulgarian Master Vintners is the import mm-hmm. company. And on the internet, we have bulgarianwine.com. And write a blog, Bulgarian Wine, selling Bulgarian wines from Sonoma. So that's the Bulgarian team. And I'm from Bulgaria originally, of course. Okay.
And we will have lots of questions about that. But the very first thing, I noticed that you have a bottle of something that's chilled, and you have some glasses sitting in front of you. So why don't we pour a little bit, and tell us what you're pouring.
This wine just came off from the boat, actually, 2 weeks ago, and it's a Sauvignon Blanc that we just released, 2008 vintage from Thracian Valley. And as you can see, it's a straw pale color. With bottles.
Let's get a little bit from Maria. Maria as well.
I apologize. And it's one of the lightest bottles, actually, on the market. And here's some for Bradley.
Mm-hmm. So this is just...
So I
Sauvignon Blanc.
Thracian Valley Sauvignon Blanc, just released, 2008. Mm-hmm. And it's a long a voyage for this wine. It goes from Bulgaria to Malta, goes then to on the boat over the Panama Canal, back on the south, on the Pacific Ocean, on the west side, and it comes here in 45 days. So it's a long voyage.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we bring it in. But with all the modern technology, we went back to a Roman team on the label, which specifies, you know, points to the Bulgaria past of being part of Thrace at that time and part of Rome as a Roman province. And that where we go back to the history of Bulgaria and the winemaking, which dates maybe 2,000 years before Christ.
Mm-hmm. That's just fascinating. And what sort of remnants of that period can you find? Do you find in Bulgaria?
They find quite a bit of Roman grape presses.
That's
a common find, actually, from the Roman times. They still have the very modern looking Roman press, and you mm-hmm. can probably buy one of the antique markets if you have the right connections. But one of the latest finds was a jar with grape seeds that were dated way before that period. That was going to about 6,000 BC.
Really? Grape seeds?
Grape seeds that points to winemaking uh-huh. in some way in Bulgaria. And the oldest ones were in Greece that are dated about 4,000 years before Christ.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's fascinating.
So that goes quite a bit back, but for more of a winemaking that is to our traditional thinking, probably about 1,000 years, as Bradley was researching last week on the internet. So we point to the 1,000 years before Christ.
Now, how did you get involved in all this, Bradley?
Well, it's interesting. I have a PR company, and I specialize in folks in the wine business, and I came across Vance in Sonoma, and it's fascinating what's going on here. I was unaware of how much history and how much interesting stuff happened in Bulgaria in the wine business that was kind of wiped out by the Iron Curtain, and there's a whole story that Vance will tell us a little bit. But he got me involved in helping him to promote these wines, and they fit so well right now because the price is right. Bulgarian wines, you're hard-pressed to find a Bulgarian wine that's more than 10 or 15 bucks. Mm-hmm.
So the Sauvignon Blanc that we're drinking right now, what would it retail for here?
$7.99.
And
on a deal in Traversos, for example, here in town, probably $6.99 or $5.99 even.
Uh-huh. Now, talk a little bit about the economics of that and also about this whole idea. I mean, some people think, oh, well, it's coming so far and everyone yells at me about my carbon footprint and I should be only drinking, and here I am in Sonoma County, and why should I, you know, why is it okay to look to a wine from that far away?
Well, one thing that this makes a difference here is the price of real estate. If we're going back to the acre of land in Bulgaria and acre of land in California, wine country, it's 1 to 10. So basically we're looking at lower cost for production, lower cost for the based on the grape prices. Mm-hmm. And that's where we start. One of the pluses in the scenario is one of the oldest grape growing regions in the world mm-hmm. that delivers wine with different stylistic characteristics. Mm-hmm. And it makes it interesting to especially for the connoisseurs in wine country to find out a wine from another country. And I mm-hmm. have more support in north from San Francisco than any other part of California, for example, for my wines. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. amazing that the more knowledgeable the palate of the our consumers in wine country are, and then you have a better understanding and more interest to a wine from another country or region.
And in reading the materials that Bradley gave me, also there's something about the bottles are lighter weight. There's something that
yes, we were looking at
makes them environmentally
some kind of a environmental message and reduce costs of moving the wine across the ocean mm-hmm. and so on. So we picked up the lightest bottle available in Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. And if we empty this bottle by the end of the show, we can measure it. But I just looked at a bottle was announced at 300 grams as the lightest bottle on the market right now. So I'm curious exactly what is the difference here. But that compared to some of the bottles that I see in the better stores in California that are so heavy. I mean,
yes.
It is, and they had the gold imprint on them and all that. I mean, it's hard to lift a case. And when you ship or something like this, you notice the difference. I lift cases myself, so I know the difference from case to case.
Yeah, absolutely. Maria, I want to bring you in because, you do more than just write about sparkling wine. You've gone to the CIA and studied in the wine program, and I understand you're working on becoming a master sommelier.
My goal is to become certified.
To become certified.
Yeah, master sommelier is kind of outside of my...
Okay. To become a certified sommelier.
Yes.
Sommelier. So do you want to tell us what you think of, or just talk about the characteristics of this wine?
Oh, I thought it was really light, very refreshing. It is really pale in color. I'm wondering, let's see, what year is this from?
2008.
So it's very recent vintage. I think it's a really nice, light, refreshing. It doesn't, very balanced wine.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be fun definitely to drink on a warm day like yesterday.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's got there's a real pleasing delicacy, but without there's a softness as well. Mm-hmm. There's the softness on the palate that's very pretty.
Right. You don't get any of those kind of wild, sort of overwhelming tropical fruit sort of flavors that you get from some Sauvignon Blancs, nor is it overly grassy or green.
You have to think also that Thracian Valley is a warmer part of Bulgaria, so we're talking about Sauvignon Blanc produced in a warmer part of the country as well. So that would add to the characteristics. And the region where we are picking up the grapes is just below the Balkan Mountains, which is one of the ancient mountains in Bulgaria, so everything seeps down through the mountains in the valley floor. And maybe the minerality that Bradley was talking about before the show, it comes out of that soil.
Uh-huh. Well, it's really a lovely wine. Why don't we take a little musical break here, Lawrence, and we will come back. And we're going to shift topics. We're going to talk about bubbly wine and then return to Bulgaria. It's Mouthful. That was the Bulgarian Women's Chorus, which was the main thing I knew about Bulgaria for a long time. I used to hear that music, I think, probably back as long ago as on K-San during the glory days. I just loved that music. Anyway, like I said, we're going to shift to sparkling wine. The book has just come out, right, Marie?
Yes, Maria? It was released last Tuesday.
Oh, congratulations.
That's
it probably still cries at night. It's a new baby. and it's divided into... sections, the classics, bubble teenies, fruitful fizz, rose-colored glasses. I did a story on sparkling reds a couple years ago, I think it was. I love the sparkling reds. Latin libations, bubbles in bloom, mixed and muddled, happy endings, and then recipes for mixers and an appendix. Now, I left my copy with all my notes at home, so... I can't ask all the questions I developed, but I do have. Why don't you talk first, though, about what made you decide to write this?
I just thought it was a fun topic. I've always loved sparkling wines ever since I was a little girl, actually. And I noticed when I started traveling abroad that in northern Italy and southern France and a lot of places, they enjoy sparkling wines like that are regional wines a lot more often.
Yes.
Just sort of with lunch, before dinner, sort of a casual thing. And they really are attuned to the fact that wines with bubbles have this special quality to them. And they really help to set a festive mood and make people happy. And so I thought that would be a great idea to try to promote that idea more here in the U.S.
Yeah. There's a woman who has a little cooking school in her home, Kate Baumhefner, and she and her husband's a winemaker, and they were on maybe a year ago, and she told the best story. Every day, they both work at home. Every day at 6 o'clock, they have a glass of sparkling wine, and if she's working and notices that at 6 o'clock, she just lifts up her hand behind her shoulder, and her husband is there putting the glass of sparkling wine in. And I thought, that is the way to live.
It is, yeah. I've met a number of people, including some people who came today to Iron Horse, who said that their every Friday tradition is having some champagne or sparkling wine, watching British sitcoms, and then having appetizers and just sort of, starting the weekend in that way.
Yeah, it is. It's or it's a great way. It's a great way to wake up.
You know? And it's easy. It's like you said, someone else was saying, if you're kind of down, it lifts your spirits. And if you're happy, it's a great way to celebrate. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of appropriate for all occasions. Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the recipes. Certainly some like Kir Royale.
Yes, definitely a classic. You know, from France. The French 75 is another great classic.
Now describe that one. I don't think that one's quite as familiar.
The French 75 is something that was credited to, was created by French, I mean rather American Army officers who were stationed over in France around World War One, and the French 75 name is a reference to an artillery gun that was left over from the previous war, and I think it was 1897, that was still quite powerful and smooth. So and the cocktail itself is a combination of champagne, gin, and then sugar and lemon juice, and then usually you drop a brandied cherry in it. So it's a really kind of a sophisticated, lighter style of a champagne cocktail.
Gosh, mm-hmm. Enlist me.
And then, of course, you have the Blini. And we have special Blinis here in Sonoma County.
Oh.
Because Dry Creek Peach and Produce, which grows the best peaches I've ever had. And their white peaches are so great. And they have one white peach that has so much of the red around the pit that when they puree it, it just stays pink. And you stir some of that into some Prosecco or some Cava. Walk through the vineyards looking for white peaches. It's perfect.
That sounds wonderful. And then I kind of went on from there, started with the classics and then got into some other cocktails, like ones that are more sort of martini-like that use more spirits, because I think it's a great combination because the bubbles tend to kind of lighten up a martini mm-hmm. instead of having, you know, a whole, like, you know, 5 ounces of hard alcohol. So I have a great one I did called the Big Apple. I've been eating Gravenstein apples since I got here yesterday and haven't stopped because they're so delicious. But that's a combination of a Brut sparkling wine, a slice of apple, and a little Calvados and a little Frangelico with nutmeg on top.
Uh-huh.
So it's a kind of a nice fall cocktail. And then we went into things that have like fruits, really very much inspired by what's in season, different times of the year. Another great cocktail for harvest time that's coming up soon is the Tiziano, which I had at Trevigna first, but that's said to be a harvest time drink, and it's just fresh pressed grape juice mm-hmm. with Prosecco or like a Brut sparkling wine, and it's mm-hmm. just a really refreshing drink, and the fresh grape juice is what makes it.
Well, where do you find fresh pressed grape juice?
Usually if you take grapes and put them through a juicer. Okay. Is the best way at home.
Or you live yes. next door to, you know, a vineyard yeah. or a winery.
Yes. In the wine country, that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I know. I think it was last year or the year before, Rosso, a little restaurant in Santa Rosa, they were getting fresh juice.
Yeah, it's great for the 1 month that you can get it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's an ephemeral pleasure.
Yes.
What do you think are the most important things for people to know when drinking sparkling wines at home? From buying them, storing them, all that sort of thing. Because I think you made a really good point right at first. In general, people still think of it as a special occasion beverage. I do, but only because I can't open a bottle for myself, you know, and I live alone. So a special occasion to me. Someone comes over, okay, let's have some sparkling wine.
Really? Well, see, if you have a good champagne stopper.
You have to have a good stopper.
That has yes. the two hinged arms on the side. Yes. You can do that. You can open one. You know, yeah. by yourself.
I need to get a better stopper.
Have it in the refrigerator and sort of go back to it when you want to.
And there's always the splits.
Exactly. Those are a great option, and those are a lot more available right now. But I think one of the first things to start with is that you really want to have the bottle properly chilled before you try to open it. I was talking with someone about this today, and they were kind of surprised to hear that you don't really want the cork to come popping and flying off, because there's actually the same amount of pressure inside the bottle as you find in a truck tire or behind a bullet coming out of a gun barrel. So yeah. that's not something you want to have flying off. So you want to chill the bottle for about an hour or so in the refrigerator, or say about 30, 40 minutes in an ice and water bath and mm-hmm. get it nice and cold. And then, you know, you can open it up safely. But the other thing is to keep in mind, there's a whole range, just like any foods. I mean, there's a whole range of sparkling wines for different occasions. Mm-hmm. So if you are just doing sort of a casual backyard barbecue, or if you want to make cocktails, by all means, go for something that's a little less expensive, something in the, you know, $10 to $15, you know, $18 range, mm-hmm. There's all kinds of wineries around here.
Oh, yeah, there's so many. And I even tell people, when you want something really affordable, Spanish Cava.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish Cava is a real bargain. And if you know the ones that are dry, Because yeah. I prefer dry.
Okay.
And I think dry makes, usually, I think dry makes better cocktails.
Yes. I don't know how you feel about mentioning brands.
On we can mention brands.
Okay. Because one of the ones that I've seen a lot lately is Cristalino.
Cristalino.
Is a brand of cava, and they make a brut. They also do a rosé, a brut rosé. And I've seen it at Whole Foods. I've seen it at Bristol Farms. I've seen it at all kinds of markets. Usually at World Market, usually about $8 a bottle maximum. So that's a great choice for doing cocktails.
Yeah. You can even, I think it's a Cost Plus, you can get it for $4.99 for a full size bottle. So, you know, it's great. And then, you know, we have so many great producers from Iron Horse. And then Bradley used to work at Shug in the years that they make their Rouge de Noir, very dark, beautiful sparkling wine. It's just wonderful. But we have Schramsberg as well.
Domaine Carneros is
there's
great.
Domaine Carneros.
Domaine Carneros.
Gloria Ferrer.
Gloria Ferrer, yes. Which is the parent company is Freshenet. Freshenet people, which is another good cava.
Yeah, I also like, actually, I even prefer the it's Segura Viudas, which is also in their same portfolio. They import that also. And you can find that one at Trader Joe's very easily. They make a really fun one. It's their Brut Heredad Reserva, which is about maybe $17 at Trader Joe's. And it comes in this bottle that has a pewter sort of a medallion on the front. And then it has like a kind of a pewter kind of base to it. So it looks really fun and fancy.
It's a great bottle.
You give it as a gift.
Yes. Yeah, that's I love that bottle. You don't just write about sparkling wine, though.
No.
No, you have a blog.
www.thebubblygirl.com. And it's a website. And there's information just about entertaining, about making cocktails, about wine, about travel, kind of all my sort of fun things that I love to do. Okay. But it's like more of a lifestyle site. But I do share cocktail recipes there and information on great places to go in different areas that I've visited that have wonderful sparkling cocktails, because it is actually a very, like I said, it's a classic form, and it's something that's getting more popular as we're seeing the resurgence of classic cocktail bars around the country.
Yeah. And you're based in San Diego now.
Yes.
Yeah, but you're originally from Chicago.
Originally from Chicago.
Does Chicago creep into the book, The Bubbly Bar, at all?
I'm trying to think. I don't think it exactly does, but I have one of the cocktails that I like a lot. It's a Midwestern drink. It makes me think of the Midwest. It's called the Sour Cherry, and because Michigan grows these amazing kind of tart cherries that you find in the fall, and I've mixed that with, it's a sour cherry syrup that I actually found at a Middle Eastern store, and mix that with maraschino, the liqueur, and brandy.
Oh, wow.
With the sparkling wine. And it's a really nice, you know, sort of fall, but very adult kind of a drink.
One thing I like to do that sounds maybe just a tad similar is to put either some fresh pomegranate juice or even just a few drops of the pomegranate molasses that you also find in Middle Eastern stores, and then some fresh pomegranate arils.
Yeah, actually, I have something very similar. I call it the lava lamp.
And oh, God, what a great name.
Because the first time we created this for Christmas is at a friend's house, we wanted to make up something, and so we used pomegranate juice, but in the book I use a poma, which is a pomegranate liqueur that I think just really captures that flavor perfectly, and dropped the seeds in the sparkling wine, and they started traveling up and down with the bubbles, kind
like
of like a lava lamp.
Oh, that's so great. So, I have a lava lamp, so that's very close to my heart.
Right.
We're going back to Bulgaria now, and we're going to start with something yummy to eat. Vance, will you tell me about what it is you've brought?
Well, this is the traditional banica. It's a filo dough pastry with feta cheese and egg. It's close to the version of the spinacopita from Greece, but in this version we don't have any spinach in there.
It sounds maybe like it's more similar to pteropita, which is the little triangles that just have the egg and feta cheese.
That's exactly the same thing. And this one is made flat in a pan. That's when it's sliced like this. Otherwise, it would be a rolled filo dough. My mom used to make the filo in the house. And when we start doing that, this is a Sunday. Banica is a Sunday big brunch meal in Bulgaria. It's the celebration. And my mom would get up early in the morning, and she would draw these sheets of the filo.
Oh, that's... Yeah.
With a roller like this. Uh-huh. And then she would spread them all around the house, and they hang out on the tables, on the beds, and everything. They need to dry out about half an hour. And then you start rolling each layer in a roll, and you put the cheese and the egg mixture, and then you roll it in a circle, which is a traditional one. So it's a big circle of sheets of filo going in that circle, and it's like a picture when it comes out of the oven. It's cooked to a slight golden brown, and the whole house smells. So that's the bunny. So that's what we have on Sunday brunch.
Oh, well, let's try it.
Oh, please
and
do.
And tell us about Bulgarian feta, because if you're in a good cheese shop around Sonoma County, you can usually find, you know, Greek, French, Bulgarian, and sometimes domestic feta. And when they have it, I always get the Bulgarian because that's the one I prefer.
I always get the Bulgarian feta cheese too, honestly, but that's part of the way I'm coming from. I don't know what makes it special. There are two things that connect Bulgaria to yogurt and maybe the cheese as well. But the yogurt, if you read the back label on any yogurt, says Bacillus bulgaricus, which is probably something that affects also the feta cheese and adds to the flavor of that fermentation process. Also, the mountains where the sheep are grazing are pretty pristine these days, clean environmentally. It's something that comes together right in Bulgaria. But I would say that maybe the microbiological process adds to that, and it's a local since they export every year the Bacillus bulgaricus to all the producers around the world. They sell the culture actually from Bulgaria.
Oh, well, this is really lovely. Really lovely. What are some of the other really traditional foods for people who are utterly unfamiliar with Bulgarian cuisine? What shapes it?
Bulgaria is right in the middle of the Balkans, so we are crossroads between Turks, Greeks, the Romans. Everybody had passed through Bulgaria, so it's a big mixture, a mixture of cuisine. Last night we had a big party in my house, so I was doing lamb skewers, which is a traditional Bulgarian summer grill thing. We roast lamb again, slow roasting lamb. I would roast my lamb for about 5-6 hours in a clay pot, and I'll pour half a bottle of wine inside there with onions and herbs. A lot of the Bulgarian dishes that I prefer are actually without meat. They're simple beans or lentil soups, and there's a good summer soup that is made with yogurt and cucumber. It's called tarator. And a version of that idea is the tzatziki that the Greeks serve as a side dish. But in Bulgaria, it's served cold, very cold.
Cold as a soup?
Yeah, cold as a
soup. Oh, that just and sounds so good.
In the summertime, it's so beautiful.
Especially yesterday.
Yes, that was going to be really great. We put a little garlic in there and cucumber and dill. That's it. It's a simple summer soup called tarator.
It sounds just great. Now, Bradley, during one of the songs, you were talking about more recent history. Bulgarian history certainly goes back really far, or Bulgarian history of wine. Well, but you were talking about during the Russian period.
Yeah, from what I've learned from working with Vance, it's amazing. First of all, I didn't really know that Bulgaria has one of the richest winemaking histories anywhere, which we've been talking about a little bit. But during the Russian era, the Iron Curtain, Bulgaria, for the most part, made bulk wine for the Russian market, which eliminated all the artisan wineries, and it became just kind of industrial. And then the Iron Curtain fell. And I'm not really quite sure, Vance, you're going to have to bring us up to speed on this and how Pepsi-Cola got involved.
Well, it was before the fell of the Iron Curtain. Pepsi was doing business already in Bulgaria in the 80s, and they were selling concentrate and all the Pizza Hut probably equipment and so on. But the hard currency exchange didn't exist at the time during the communists. So in order for them to repatriate their profits and money from Bulgaria, they signed a deal to get one of the Bulgarian labels. Maybe some of the listeners remember the old Trakia label from Bulgaria with a gold coin of Alexander on the front, which in the 80s was sold quite a lot in the States.
Just to make the repatriation of money for Pepsi out of the country. And unfortunately, under this scheme, they were taking a lot of wine out of Bulgaria, and the Bulgarian producers start pouring too many different wines under that label, and it diluted the quality. So that contributed, and Pepsi was dealing only with it wasn't marketing quality wine. They were not thinking about the brand or anything like this. So it was just taking money out of Bulgaria in the form of wine.
In the form of wine. Oh, that's interesting. The bulk wine, what can you tell us about it? Was it red, always red? Was it a red and a white? Who drank it?
Actually, the ones that were produced for the Russian market, I didn't like because they go on the sweeter side. It's colder in Russia, so probably they need a little bit of sweetness. And traditionally, they have the Georgian and Moldovan wines that are sweeter. So the Bulgarian wines that were produced especially for Russia were not high on my list necessarily, but they were at one point in the 70s, late 70s, Bulgaria had the second highest acreage of Cabernet Sauvignon in the world. They had more Cabernet Sauvignon at that time planted than in California in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then we had two prohibitions in Bulgaria. The first prohibition, I will mention later, it was in about 780. But the second one, just at the end of the communist time, Gorbachev had a sobriety campaign, and he, or under his influence, they pulled out from the vineyards 30% of the Bulgarians' grape plantings.
Oh, really?
So that was the sobriety campaign.
So really they wanted to decrease
the production. And that was mandated by Kremlin, and that's what happened.
And what replaced the vines?
Nothing. They were gone. They were gone.
So they didn't put in another form of another crop.
So it went down. The production went down, and Bulgaria was on the top 10 exporter list. Now it's about 13th or 14th, depends on the year. So that was the story with that mass-produced brands that were available in the States as well. And at one point, though, there was a lot of good wines produced that went to Germany and UK, Scandinavia was buying from Bulgaria at the time, the high-end of Bulgarian brands. But there were, again, the state wasn't, it was state-owned operation, so they weren't able to look into brand creation and management and so on. It was all business. So and they were not the greatest businessmen at that time, the communists, they were doing something else.
See, I was curious. Now, I noticed the wines that you brought today, we're drinking the Sauvignon Blanc. You have a Merlot and a Cab.
And a Cabernet. So,
but aren't there some indigenous varietals?
Yes, they are. The ones that I worth mentioning is the grape called Melnik from the town of Melnik and the region of Melnik.
Melnik.
And that is, there are several towns of Melnik throughout Eastern Europe. So Melnik was, it comes from the background of mill. It's like a mill town or something. But it's called the wide leaf grapevine of Melnik. So they have these big leaves, probably good for domas. But that's a Bulgarian characteristic.
Is that a red?
It's a red, yes. Yeah. It's a sturdy red. Mm-hmm. Then we have an interesting one that is called Rubin. And that's a cross between Syrah and Nebbiolo that was crossed actually in Bulgaria in the 40s. And that's unusual. It's called Rubin. And I think you probably tried a Czerga wine in Poland that you mentioned.
I did when I was in Poland.
That was that cross of Rubin, actually, the cross between Syrah and Nebbiolo. Mm-hmm. And the white wines, there's a Miscat, which is close to the Muscat, but it's a Miscat wine from Bulgaria, and Dimyat. So we have the varietals. They're not that popular. And one of the things I would like to mention is also a Bulgarian varietal called Mavrud. And there is an interesting story. That's about the first prohibition of Bulgarian wines. During Han Krum, that's about 800 AC, there was the Han decided that he should pull out all the grapevines again from Bulgaria. And he did. And in one of the battles with Byzantium, he goes, and we were losing the battle, and there is this one big macho guy there doing a lot of damage on the battlefield, and the king pulls him out and says, "What's your name?" So, soldier, and the guy says, my name is Mavrud. How do you have so much strength? You're a brave soldier. And he said, well, honestly, my mother didn't pull out the vineyard, so she gave me a little, one of these soft, how do you call this?
Flask.
Okay, soft flask.
Yeah, soft flask, and I've been drinking this wine, so my bravery came out. So that was the and they named that grape varietal on that guy, Mavrud.
Interesting.
So, and that was the first prohibition in Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. And after the battle, the king said, well, let's reestablish the vineyards. I think we will win more battles that way.
Interesting. How far back can you trace of the varietals that are grown now in Bulgaria? How far back can you trace them? Do we have any that we know are really ancient? Have ancient?
Definitely the Mavrud and the Melnik. Yes, okay. They're the ones. And if we follow the movement of Vitis vitifera from if we point down to Iran, like say in Shiraz. Then it goes to Oamenia, the first places that the Vitis vitifera starts. It transfers across the Black Sea to Bulgaria, and at that time it's Thrace. The Greeks come in, they pick up the Vitis vitifera from the Thracians. Then the Romans come to Greece, they pick up the grapevine. So historically, it's a very interesting that first movement of the grapevine throughout Europe, and at the end it comes all the way here and so on. But also in these ancient times, there was a great study done by a British scholar about the supply of wine to the legions of Rome. And that's a fascinating area where each legion, there were 13 legions or 13 legions, I believe, they were stationed around the world, in the ancient world, mm-hmm. and they needed their supply of wine. There was 14,000 men. The staff that was supporting their existence, and they needed their meat, they needed their wine delivered, otherwise the soldiers would get either sick or they would rebel, and that goes with the caravans of and supply line that was huge at the time, with boats leaving Sicily, Bulgaria ports, and so mm-hmm. on. And Bulgaria was one of the suppliers, or Thrace was one of the suppliers at the time. To the Romans legions, and that's how this label came into actual creation, the Vini,
the Vini?
Mm-hmm. And the Veni Vidi Vici motto mm-hmm. on it, and we go with the Roman numerals on the bottle and stress that Thracian Valley connection to the ancient wine world.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for sticking with us. My guest this evening, Maria Hunt, author of The Bubbly Bar, Champagne and Sparkling Wine Cocktails for Every Occasion. It is a really fun book and fun and good to look at, and you'll learn things as well. Also with us this evening, Vance Petronoff and Bradley Gray talking about Bulgarian wines. And Maria, you just brought up such a natural connection, Bulgarian roses, and I give a shout out to the Russian River Rose Company. Hope the event yesterday was really wonderful. We've had them on a couple of times, and Bulgarian roses, my understanding is they're the ones that have the most amazing scent and enough oil that you can actually distill the perfume.
And there is a whole area in Bulgaria that thrives on the production of rose oil. That's the Rose Valley, and it's a beautiful area between the Balkans, the old Balkans, and a mountain ridge called the Middle Balkans, basically. But the valley is fascinating, and several beautiful towns that remind me of Sonoma quite a bit in history. The uprising of Bulgaria against the Turks happened in a town that looks so much like Sonoma, and that's why my hometown here in the state, Sonoma, I love that, just the feeling of it when you see the plaza of Sonoma. That's the area. But the Rose Valley, the way we have the grapes here, it's only roses, and you go and travel about 1 hour, you can go through a rose plantations, and the whole valley smells in the morning.
Oh, that must be amazing.
It is amazing view to see. unfortunately, they had some kind of a sickness on the roses that would diminish production, and now they're replanting again. And that goes back. I think the Turks brought the roses to Bulgaria. They were probably from again Iran and Persia, but the Turks I contribute to them. We always have this conflicting history with Turks, with the Turks and Greeks in Bulgaria. But it's the melting pot is the Bulgarian culture and food and rose oils and customs. So we're part of the world that way.
And rose water too, right?
Rose
water that you can use in cooking. Yeah. Yeah, tell us about what you did in the book with rose.
No, I was saying, because I love floral essences too, both violet and rose, not only for scent but also as to eat. So the book that's on the recipe that's on the cover is called Love in the Afternoon, and it's tangerine juice, but it has rose water and mint. And rose water is actually something that's consumed in a lot of countries to help cool the body during the summer and also to calm you down. So it's a really fun way to use something like that, a floral essence. People don't expect that.
Yeah, and I know some people. In fact, Friday I was at Worth Our Weight. It was family game night. I learned a new card game. It was really fun. And they had their big, just their water, to serve yourself water. And she added rose petals. And that will add just such a pleasant element. And I hadn't thought about it being cooling, but yeah.
It is. I have another cocktail that has a rose tea. It's like just a rose petal tea you steep. Mm-hmm. And the little Tuaca, which is like an Italian liqueur that has like sort of a vanilla and orange flavor. And then with the sparkling wine as well. So there's lots of different ways. I think sparkling wines are so versatile. I mean, lots of wines, but sparkling wines especially are very versatile.
Is that effervescence somehow lends itself to taking on other flavors?
I think so, and it takes those flavors and kind of highlights them. It's sort of like a little atomizer with the bubbles, sort of lifting them to your nose.
Is there much of a sparkling wine tradition in Bulgaria?
There are two companies produce traditional French method of champagne in Bulgaria. Also, they were targeted to the Russian market, so they were making a sweeter version of sparkling wines. And I like actually the red sparkling wine from Bulgaria, and you mentioned one of from here. Mm-hmm. But actually, that's a treat to have it on a special occasion, a red champagne. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I would say back on the road, there is a dry Muscat from Bulgaria that is available probably in Santa Rosa from Târgoviște. That has these floral rose petals into it. And it's a dry Muscat, so you'll be surprised. It's as dry as this wine, but it just comes with this strong fragrance of roses.
Oh, gosh, that sounds lovely.
Yes. And the other, there's a Bulgarian also variety of the Traminer. In Italy, they have the same Traminer, the town of Traminer and so on. But that's also very floral, very beautiful dry wine as well as in Alsatian style.
Uh-huh. Now, you also have sitting over there in between the Merlot and the Cabernet Sauvignon, you have a very beautiful, very, very tall blue bottle.
This cobalt blue bottle is Grappa di Muscato, actually.
Oh, okay.
Grappa made from Muscat grapes. And maybe we should open it and smell at least that rose petal flavors.
Sure, and let's explain to somebody who doesn't know what grappa. I mean, if you drink regularly, you know what grappa is, but I think a lot of people don't.
Well, as any of the grape producing countries, Bulgarians, Italians, everybody on the Mediterranean uses everything left over from the grape production. So it was natural to find a way to get everything, and so the fermentation from the leftover skins and must and everything makes the grappas. And there are various styles of grappa throughout the Mediterranean. The Italians make the macho grappas that are supposed to knock your socks off. And this one is more feminine grappa. It's because of that Muscat flavor. Uh-huh. So it's 40% only, and it doesn't burn your mouth that much. And that's a different example of it. And won a gold medal at the San Diego and Monterey Wine Competition.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's...
Maybe open
let's
that.
Let's open it, sure.
And see how that smells. Bradley will help me. He has a steadier hands.
Is there anything you can tell us about that bottle? I mean, it's really quite remarkably shaped.
Yes, it's a ready-made vase, basically, and it's an Italian hand-blown bottle. Maybe.
Let's see.
It's a good way to put it on your hands. It's actually, you smell and taste grappa if you put it on your hand and then rub it, or a little bit just. Rub it and you get all the flavor comes up.
And then you hope you don't get pulled over on the way home.
I was going to say, and you know, this is a ready-made perp walk.
now we have
No, it's there's water in that glass. So here, tell me what you think, Lawrence. Can you smell roses? Alcohol,
end.
Yeah. But you know, when you have it
dries down, you smell the roses.
And the alcohol will blow off.
Yes.
That's fun.
But that's what the interesting thing about the grappas in Bulgaria and on the Balkans is that we consume the grappa as a martini chilled before dinner with a tomato salad. The best combination is a tomato salad with a shot of grappa that is chilled. And that's how the dinner starts in Bulgaria.
That sounds really good because, you know, with that nice and chilled, that floral quality would go really nice with tomato. We were eating a lot of tomatoes today out at Iron Horse.
Yeah, with the Russian
today. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would be really nice.
So that's the traditional. When the Italians drink the grappa after dinner, that is served warm and as a digestive.
Mm-hmm. Where do people get the wines? I know I think you mentioned early in Traversos.
Here in Santa Rosa, Bill Traverso, who was my teacher at the class in the JC, which I took.
A colleague.
One of the most informed people in the wine business.
Absolutely.
That, just such a gentleman. I've always been an admirer of his.
And so they carry the Vini?
They were fans of Vini, and they've tried various Bulgarian wines over the years.
And Vance's wine business, BulgarianWine.com, is the largest importer of Bulgarian wines in the United States.
And so if someone's listening anywhere, they don't have to be in Sonoma County. If they're listening anywhere, they can just go to BulgarianWines.com and either order on wine or find out where to get it where they are.
That is correct. BulgarianWine.com is the name of the website. And the Bulgarian community basically supports every birthday or a wedding or funeral goes with Bulgarian wines that we send out from Sonoma. So that's been the supplier to the community of Bulgarians that live throughout the states, 150,000 people, basically, of Bulgarian descent live in the country.
Now, there's a Bulgarian festival.
Yes.
It takes place every in Sonoma County, right?
Yeah. We have
is that October?
Yes. Here in the church in Santa Rosa, actually.
Glendi?
Glendi, yes.
Glendi, yes.
It's not Bulgarian, but it's, again, Slavic-Bulgarian connection there. We have the Bulgarian singers coming in.
Oh, you do?
So Santa Rosa has its part of it. Sebastopol, I believe, has a dance group that dances Bulgarian dances.
Yeah, sometimes on Sundays at the French Garden on Highway 12, there's Bulgarian dancing.
Yes.
So
there's a connection in Bulgaria and this part of Santa Rosa, Sonoma, Sebastopol.
Well, Vance, it's Vance Petronov. You can find out more information at BulgarianWines.com. Thank you so much. You were so generous with the delicious feta cheese and phyllo and the wines and the grappa. I know what I'll be dreaming of when I fall asleep.
Well, so, thank you for inviting me. It was my pleasure.
You bet.
Such a great show, too.
And Bradley, thank you very much for coming over the mountain.
Michelle, it's always a pleasure to see you.
See you again. And Maria, The Bubbly Bar, it is just out, brand new baby. Is this your first book?
It is my first book.
Isn't it a thrill?
It is really fun.
I mean, I have a friend of mine who's a writer, not in this arena, but he said, he says, when the book first comes out, you just want to wrap it in a blanket and put it in a stroller and go walking through the streets. And I always thought, you should get to do that when you have your first book.
Well, actually, no, I actually want to sell it. So, but it's on Amazon.com. You can also find it on my website,
www. People can get it through your website?
TheBubblyGirl.com. And I didn't get to mention, but there's also a really great guide to buying sparkling wines from all over the world in every price range.
Great. So, and how much is the book?
It's $16.99 retail, but I think it's about $11.50 on Amazon.
And it's published by Potter.
Yes.
And, you know, there are lots of local bookstores. And also, I assume certain wineries that sell sparkling wine are probably going to be carrying it. You're probably going to have a lot of success.
I think it will be at Domaine, Chandon, at Carneros. And then also talk to Copperfields.
Copperfields and Reader's Books over in the town of Sonoma. So my advice is always check your local bookstore first because You want them to remain your neighbors, and if you can't find it there, then you go to the internet. Well, thank you. How much longer are you going to be here?
Oh, I'm just going to be around tomorrow, and then I have to head back. I have an event on Tuesday that I'm doing cocktails for.
Well, I hope you have a really good time with the rest of your time here in Sonoma County. And we can find you at bubblygirl.com?
TheBubblyGirl.com.
TheBubblyGirl.com. And, you know, Mouthful has a Facebook page now. So anybody who appears on Mouthful's show, you can go in advance of the show and get the websites. But I will also do a follow-up and post information that we talked about today. So you just need to go to Mouthful of One Country's Most Delicious Hour on Facebook. Become a fan. We're up to 88 fans. And you can get all the information. And soon I'll start. I'll remember to get my camera actually out of my bag and start taking pictures of our guests as well. So meet me back here next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour here on KRCB. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Now let's go.